Welcome back to the Social Currency Marketing Podcast. I'm Jess Jensen, and joining is my friend Tuck Ross. How are you, Tuck?
I'm good, Jess. How are you?
I'm good. So I'm so excited. Today we are joined by an awesome guest, digital marketing leader, social media expert, Michael Stelzner, to discuss the future of digital and social marketing. And I'll give a little background about Mike. He's the founder of Social Media Examiner, author of the books Launch and Writing White Papers, and the man behind Social Media Marketing World, the industry's largest conference. He's also host of the Social Media Marketing Podcast, so we have a fellow podcaster in our presence, and founder of Social Media Marketing Society, and the central character in The Journey, which is an episodic YouTube documentary. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you for having me, Jess and Tuck. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So let's start off with your origin story, as we like to call it. I always like to kind of get the background on folks. Love to know, you know, how you got into social media and digital marketing, and then what eventually led you to create the Social Media Marketing World Conference back in 2013.
Well, the simple version of the story is that I have been a serial entrepreneur since the mid 90s. So prior to that, I was working in tech, and this is when the internet was just kind of being born. And once I went off on my own, I was helping high-tech businesses do everything from developing logos to writing marketing collateral and trade show booths and annual reports and all that kind of stuff. I had a creative agency, basically. Then around the 2008-ish, 2009, I started noticing everyone talk about this thing called social media, and I didn't really even understand it. So at that time, I was known mostly for white papers. As a matter of fact, here in San Diego, I used to go to Qualcomm every month and train engineers to write these darn things. And I would travel over the country, you know, helping out-of-work journalists figure out how to get into this business writing thing. And I discovered Facebook and LinkedIn, and like was kind of, especially with Facebook, I'm like, I think that's just for college students, right? And before you know it, it wasn't just for college students anymore. And I started writing articles for publications about social media. And I noticed that when I wrote those articles, those were the most popular articles that publication had ever had in the entire year. And I'm like, what the heck? I was writing for Marketing Profs and Copyblogger and all these other really big blogs. So I went out and registered the domain socialmediaexaminer.com, immediately registered the trademark, thinking the San Francisco Examiner was going to sue me. And they never did, of course. And long and short of it is, in 2009, started Social Media Examiner. The thing exploded. Of course, it was all about how-to content. And then around 2013, we went from teaching online conferences to physical conferences, and we launched Social Media Marketing World. And today, it's kind of blown up. We have, I don't know, 15 million people a year that consume the various things that we produce, and it's a lot of fun.
Wow. And what's the anticipated attendee base for the conference this year, do you think? Do you have a sense?
Social Media Marketing World will probably have about 4,500 to 5,000 people from more than 60 countries come to the San Diego Convention Center this year.
Wow. That's phenomenal.
That's awesome.
It's huge.
Thank you.
Yeah. Cool. So kind of similar to you and your podcast and a lot of the written work that you've done, you know, we focus on social media, but we also kind of extend and bleed into broader digital marketing topics. And partly because they're all so related and connected to each other. So I want to come back to social because that's, of course, the core of the discussion, but kind of want to begin actually with a few of those other channels that often have sort of tentacles into social. So in particular, I'm thinking about email marketing, podcasting, and blogging, which I know are all areas of expertise for you. I'm curious from your perspective, how have those channels changed over the past 5 or 10 years? And how do you maybe think they intermingle with social today?
So you said email, podcasting, and blogging, right? So
yeah.
Let's start with blogging. Today we are in an era where people do not read as much as they used to. So blogging used to be like the thing that everybody did. And, you know, people would have blogs and then all of a sudden they'd have books and then they'd have TV shows and it was all because of their blog. Today, people are instead getting little bursts of information everywhere, right? Thank you, social media. Podcast email marketing has gotten harder, because there are algorithms that are smart AI systems that will read an email. And no matter how hard you try, they will realize that you are marketing with that email and they will make sure it does not get delivered to the inbox. So email deliverability is exceptionally hard. So far we know people don't read, and they don't read your emails probably as much because they're not getting received inside the inbox. And then of course we've got the listening, the ear thing, right? Podcasting is exploding. And it's because people are craving long form information or entertaining content, and they can multitask. They can listen to it on a train, on an airplane, on a horse, in a canoe. These are all places people have told me they've listened to my podcast on the front of an aircraft carrier, you know, as they're controlling it. I mean, it's pretty crazy. Just about anywhere you can imagine, in the bath, in the shower. So people are, in the same way they watch Netflix and Hulu everywhere, they also consume great audio while they're doing things that are boring, right? And that is a big opportunity.
Yeah, podcasting feels like it's blowing up. And I know we've got some questions around that very topic. So I couldn't agree more. I feel like it's sort of, audio is kind of becoming the new it channel.
And video, really, for that matter. You know, people are actually, I think that the best way for anyone to understand this, who's been around for a while and is as gray as I am, it's the great fragmentation, right? So I'm 50, and back when I was in college, there was just a couple of TV channels, and Simpsons is what everybody watched. And when they wanted to watch a movie, they went into a room with like 100 other people in the theater, right? Or if they wanted the news, they read it in the physical paper that was delivered to them, right? And then now today, there's a million ways for us to get our information and for us to interact. And as a result, there's so many options out there that we often tend to ignore them all. And it makes it a lot harder as a marketer, because finding a channel that works, you know, what used to work doesn't work anymore. And that's the big struggle and the opportunity.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll follow on that, because, you know, Mike, what you're saying is absolutely, you know, right on. And it's super interesting to see this dynamic change between the spaces. And, you know, you mentioned video, but there is a little bit of that attention factor needs to be there, because you're watching something that, you know, non-music content like podcasting actually has the ability for. And this week we saw Spotify's recent acquisition of Gimlet Media and Anchor, interestingly announced the same day. They're making a big play here, especially, you know, off of their first quarter with positive earnings. And one of the comments coming out of the Spotify team was that they believe very soon over 20% of Spotify listening will be non-music content. And it's this quote that continues with, "This opportunity starts this next phase of growth in audio, including podcasting and telling stories," right? And the stories that serve to entertain and educate, challenge and inspire, bringing us together to break down culture barriers, even, you know, evolving to talk about educating and the rest of that. And while, you know, a lot of consumers may not know about podcasting, I really feel like this next stage may be the era of consolidation, you know, especially for Spotify, but Pandora being a fast, you know, competitor to that. What do you see is happening around the space, especially around this non-music content and including podcasting?
It's a wonderful question. And I happen to be friends with some of the top podcast experts in the world, including Tom Webster from Edison Research, and a lot of other people that I'm in a personal mastermind with, like Cliff Ravenscraft, who was the guy for podcasting, and Pat Flynn. And I have a podcast that's been around for almost 7 years. So I've been in like the top 40 or 50 in the business category for a long time. So I track this space very, very closely. Here's what I think is going on. First of all, you've got Spotify and Pandora and others like them dominate right now in the music space. And those companies pay royalties to artists, many of whom who have recorded work 20, 30, 50 years ago, okay? And for them, they're getting into this space not necessarily to make money, but to save money. And I know it sounds crazy to say this, but it's in their best interest to get people to stop listening to music and start listening to podcasting, because they are subscription-based models that are or they're supported by advertising. And if they can get even a small fragment of their audience to start listening to podcasts, that will save them money and help them with the retention of their audience. And that means they're more profitable for their shareholders. And that's very important for them. So the opportunity for marketers right now is huge, because, or anyone who has a podcast, because they are going to do everything in their power to evangelize podcasting as the next big thing. They will let their audience know. And when I last checked, Spotify has 209 million monthly active users. Okay. And Apple Music has, like, I don't know, 90 million, and they're not quite yet distributing their podcast through the Apple Music because they already have a podcast platform, and Pandora is right on their heels. So we're moving towards an era where you will see mass evangelism by traditional music entities to non-musical content. And a lot of that content is exceptionally high quality, right up there with the kind of stuff we see on Netflix, right? Like Gimlet Media produces absolutely incredible content. They've got a brand new one out, which is a crime story called Confession or something. I can't remember. I have to look it up. But they just keep pumping out the content. And I see this as a great opportunity. And they purchased Anchor because Anchor is like the simple on-road to producing podcasts. It's like the brainless way to create a podcast. So what this means is that Spotify is putting a stake in the ground. They made $1.7 billion in their last quarter. They are here and they want to compete with Apple. And I think this is good for those of us because they will help evangelize podcasting to the world. And if we can get more people listening to our message and there happens to be a Spotify ad on the front of it, who the heck cares, right? Because I get more than 500,000 downloads a month on my podcast. And these are people that are committing 45 minutes a week to me, okay? Mm-hmm. You know how much I would have to pay to get 45 minutes of watch time on any channel?
Right.
A lot of money.
Insane.
This costs me nothing.
Right.
So this is a huge opportunity for people that create high value content and that are marketers or business people, because it's just, the sky's the limit. We're just getting started.
Yeah, it's a great perspective. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, agreed. And I've read a lot about how podcasting is one of the more personal digital channels, because literally you're in people's head. And
it's very intimate. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure people have come up to you guys and said how much they love your show. You know, if they meet you in person, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I mean,
they feel like they know you.
They feel like they know you. Yeah. I'm going to go off script here a bit, because I was thinking about what the things you were just talking about around profit and sort of this extension. What are your thoughts on brands having podcasts, like companies themselves having a branded podcast?
Well, Gimlet is crushing it with that. I mean, they are doing lots of branded content podcasts. I don't happen to listen to any off the top of my head, but they're getting very smart about helping personify the brand by telling the stories of the brand in podcasts, or by having the podcast fully host and own the brand kind of sponsor, if you will, exclusively a podcast designed to draw an audience to them. There's no reason why that could not be true. I could very easily see any niche, if you know, like, let's just say you're into women's hair products. Okay. Let's say you're one of these shampoo companies. Okay. If you know that people that are into their hair are also into, perhaps beauty. Okay. I could see bringing on beauty consultants and just interviewing them and never talking about shampoo at all and having it be brought to you by that company. And all of a sudden all that value is attributed to the company that's bringing you that great content. Yeah. It works in B2B. It works. That's how we do it. You know, it just works like.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Cool. So you mentioned earlier video, and I feel like that is the other avenue, the other channel that does drive that personal relationship and kind of gives you that human factor. And I know, you know, being in this space, we all recognize sort of on the social channels, there's a little bit more of that under 10 seconds, low attention span. You've got to get my eyes on it right away. And the expectation of sticking around for longer form video is pretty low versus YouTube, where we see a little bit more of that lean back behavior. People are willing to spend 2, 3, 4, 10, 15 minutes. I'm curious, and there's so many kinds of video, right? Explainers and, you know, like, again, you've got your own vlog that you do. Stories. So what I know you've got a lot of thoughts on video. What do you think, again, thinking about small business owners who perhaps there's budget constraints, how do you think video is best used to tell your story or talk about your brand?
Well, to give this a little bit of context, podcasting versus video. If you had, imagine a pie chart in your head, imagine 5% of it is podcast and 95% of it is video. So that's how much bigger video is than podcasting. It's so big, you can't even possibly imagine it. There's 2 billion active, 2 billion daily active users on YouTube that watch an average of 45 minutes of video a day, every single day. Okay. Better wrap your brain around that.
Yeah.
This is their television. This is their cable. This is their Hulu. This is their Netflix. Okay. And this is the next generation. Okay. This is the future customer of all of us. It is gargantuous. So, backing up and just talking about the different categories of video and what it means for business. First and foremost, every business needs to figure out a video strategy. And I think the on-road is to start with stories, okay? Vertical short-form video that you do on Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, and even YouTube. These are meant to be raw with your phone, talking to your audience, someone representing your business. Or if you're the influencer, solopreneur kind of person, then it's just you. It's you showing them what you're doing. It's you talking about some thoughts and stuff. The reaction is all private. There's no public interaction at all. When they respond, it goes into your private DM on Instagram, okay? It's one-to-one. It's the future. It's now. It is essential. Everyone must do it. There are 400 million daily active users of Instagram stories, consumers of Instagram stories alone, okay?
Yeah.
More than the entire population of America. So you start there. Then you ramp up into live video. And live video is overwhelmingly a Facebook thing, okay? That's the platform that everybody seems to use for that. And live video needs to not be, hey, we're just going to take a video and act like it's live, and we're going to ignore the audience. It needs to be truly interactive. It needs to be, hey, everybody, I'm here. Which way do you want me to go, left or right? What do you want me to do? What would you like me to talk about? True interaction, acknowledgement. Things that marketers scare the heck out of marketers, right? We're used to creating things and then sending it out and calling it done.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. You have to be interactive with live. Okay, so that's stage two. Stage three is what I'm doing with The Journey, which is far more complicated, which is to create a true show. You know, something that is almost like a television show. That's a behind the scenes documentary. That's the stuff. All of these work. Start anywhere along this paradigm if you want, and you will accomplish quite a bit. Is what happens when people see you and they get a chance to chat with you, whether it's just leaving a message on a YouTube video or interacting through Instagram or being called out in a live video, it creates a connection with you or your brand that is far more valuable than them listening to you every week in a podcast. That is far more valuable than them reading the content that you publish or seeing your social. It takes it to a level that's fanatical high. And let me just give you context. When I started my blog at Social Media Examiner, I would go to conferences and everybody would say, I love your blog. It's the coolest thing. Thank you. And when I started the podcast, they'd be starting to take pictures with me saying, oh my gosh, it's Michael Stelzner. It's so amazing. Okay. Which kind of freaked me out. But then when I started doing video, it just elevated to an entirely different level. Mm-hmm. Like people sending me videos almost every day saying how much I've changed their life, or volumes of emails saying how much the brand has done it, you know? And sometimes it's because they watched the video and the podcast, but the video bolted them to my brand in a way that I could have never happened with the podcast. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling everybody listening right now, if you do not get into video, you will be left behind. Because everyone is heading in that direction and it's still early times.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so much good content there. And your Journey video series, I think, is especially interesting. It feels especially personal and raw and just natural. And I personally have enjoyed it very much, but I would be curious to know the feedback you've gotten on that.
Oh, well, first of all, any good story has conflict, doesn't it, right? And any good story has problems, right? So we purposely make sure our problems show up in that show, which is very hard for marketers to wrap their brain around. Wait, you're going to talk about stuff that failed? You're going to talk about stuff that we did wrong? What? Okay, but here's what I want to say. When was the last time you watched? Okay, think about the movie The Titanic. You knew the ship was going to sink, right? So what if they just cut to the end of the story and show this, the ship sinking? Would anybody talk about that movie? Would anybody have ever watched that movie? Of course not. They had to come up with a lot of little conflict in the story to make the story good. And the key is to tell a story, and we all have a story to tell. So I have a full-time guy on the other side of this wall and he's constantly filming. And I know when we're about to talk about something that is controversial or something that is a difficult decision that we're making, and we just film it. And then we decide later if it's going to make its way into a show, because the core of longer form video is being able to tell a story. And a story has a character that is going through a struggle and then has resolution. And anything other than that is just not a story. So all, if you just do think of any good movie like Star Wars, if they just show the end of the movie where they're getting the like ribbon around their neck or whatever, or the Death Star being destroyed, who cares, right? It's, you got to show the struggle, mm-hmm. because that's what connects with people. Sorry, I went off on a little rant there.
It's not just the destination, it's the journey.
Yes, right? Exactly. Journey.show. If they want to check out my journey.
All right. So that's a good perspective there. You know, I think in terms of conflict, one of the things that you've talked about often on the podcast and is also a high focus of the conference too is obviously Facebook security breaches, changing the algorithm, the things that go into that. One of the things that leaked about a week and a half ago now was New York Times coming out saying that Facebook, according to internal sources, is looking at combining the back end of Facebook Messenger, Instagram, and WhatsApp. There's a lot of potential reactions to this, but curious about your POV on what you think they're doing with that effort and what it offers them, going forward to stay on top despite all the controversy around their business practices and other things.
They're trying to avoid deregulation and having their company sliced up just like the original phone company was and the many different phone companies. So maybe they're trying to get ahead proactively by integrating the messenger teams, knowing that if they had to split, you know, the messenger, all those messenger teams would ideally be together instead of separate. I think that's what's going on. They'll publicly say, as Mark Zuckerberg has said, that it has to do with commerce. So what they say is that, like, on the Facebook marketplace, if they click on, message me through WhatsApp and the other person doesn't have WhatsApp, that's a problem. So we want those to be integrated so that it could still work between Messenger and WhatsApp. That's the legitimate public storyline. But I think there's a private storyline that has a lot more to do with government regulation than anything else. I don't really think it's a big deal, frankly, if they do integrate or if they don't integrate. I don't think it's going to have a big impact on a lot of people, because you got your WhatsApp people and you got your Messenger people and then you got your Instagram people. But, you know, I just don't right now see whether it's a big deal or not, frankly.
You know, I was going to ask you, do you think it, because of the capability that Messenger has with the mini apps and the rest of the plugins that now go on the Messenger side, do you think there's a play for them to compete with WeChat on a global level, more of that, almost walled garden, private network, internet within the internet, faux app store that sits inside of every phone?
Well, they've tried to do that with Facebook, right?
Right.
I mean, if you think about it, Facebook is a closed ecosystem that does almost anything you could possibly imagine. You can buy cars, you can buy movie tickets, you can have group conversations, you can do almost everything inside of Facebook that you would ever want to do. It's become the reverse America Online, as I like to call it. But I don't think that they'll ever become like, what was that Chinese one? WeChat, right? Was it WeChat?
WeChat.
Yeah, they'll never become that way because the United States won't let it happen. So in China, you have to understand you have a communist government that's got control.
Right.
And they want that. They want to have all that access so that they can see what's going on. But in America, that doesn't fly. So I don't think that the United States government will ever let Facebook accomplish that. I think instead what you'll see is you'll probably see them having to spin off applications in order to avoid monopoly kind of status.
More of the fragmentation. Yeah. Interesting. Awesome. All right.
But who knows where it's going to go? But I will tell you, Facebook is definitely not innovated much in the last year. And I believe that 2019 will be the year of innovation. I think that they've been so distracted with all the bad press and all the privacy related things that they've been building that we're going to start seeing feature after feature after feature. And we'll start to see our old faithful Facebook come back with lots of innovation.
Yep, absolutely. Jess, to you on Instagram.
Yeah. So, I mean, we spent some time on Facebook, and obviously Instagram's Facebook's not so little sister anymore. But we always talk about how Instagram is sort of the last frontier of any organic reach at all across social channels. And I know you talked about stories already. What are your, you know, how long do you think that's going to last? When are we going to see that organic reach fall apart on Instagram? And what do you think there is that people can do right now to capitalize on that?
Well, I think that there's a good chance we may see a feed that's all video on Instagram. I mean, it already leaked out for a couple of days and they said, oops, Adam Mosseri, who's used to be the head of newsfeed at Facebook and is now the head of Instagram, said, oops, but they don't do anything like that by accident, you know? So I think that maybe there may not be a newsfeed anymore and maybe it'll all be video, who knows? But I do know that there is something kind of unique about Instagram, which is that there's not a lot of dialogue necessarily. It's much more visual. So it's not a place where things get shared, where they go viral, where you have fake news, where you have people, you know, a lot of it is a little more controlled ecosystem. It's not easy to link off of it. So I kind of think that people are going there as an escape because it's kind of a fun place to go. And I think that's mm-hmm. kind of the last big opportunity that Facebook owns right now, which is Instagram. So I think that's it's a big greenfield opportunity for the next few years.
Yeah, me too. And especially when you think about the influencer space, I think they actually could do more to capitalize. They don't, for example, they have a business accounts and a, you know, private individual accounts, but they don't have an influencer account. And so there's certain things you still can't do when you're
don't be surprised that's coming actually. Cause they have, you know, they have the creator app for Facebook, you know, which I'm sure they'll come out with a creator. I've actually even seen information that perhaps something like that is coming out, like a special designation for influencers, which are creators.
Interesting. Well, makes sense.
It totally makes sense. I mean, that's where, besides YouTube, that's where they're all spending their time. So I don't know. I actually am surprised it hasn't already happened.
But IGTV is going to be the thing that they've tried to figure out what to do with. And if they can figure it out, it could be big. And I recently saw news in the last couple of days that they're starting Instagram TV long form video is starting to show up in the Instagram feed, which is long. If that happened, it's now becoming a little more like Facebook. And that'll be interesting to see how that happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this whole idea of a micro influencer, which is kind of a buzzy word right now, but I feel like it's this sort of moving away from celebrity and over to folks that are more focused on a specific vertical or industry and have some deeper expertise, whether that's the tech industry, fashion, food, travel. We talked earlier about bringing the human factor and we talked about a number of channels that kind of intersect with social. What are your thoughts on micro influencers? What are your thoughts on, again, businesses leveraging them to cut through some of the clutter on social?
Well, influencers in general is an interesting conversation. First of all, there's a lot of fake influencers out there and you have to be careful that whoever you're working with indeed does yield influence and does actually have an audience that pays attention to them. And frankly, that's getting harder and harder to discern because we as business owners and marketers are often like blinded by numbers and we look at how many followers they have or how many subscribers they have and we're like, wow, everybody must love every word they say. But when the honest truth comes out, you realize a lot of these people might have purchased followers or subscribers, or they haven't really engaged with them in a long time, or they don't actually even pay attention to the things that they're doing. So as a result, a lot of the big influencers have kind of ruined it for a lot of influencers in general. So now people are starting to look at these smaller influencers who have developed loyal followings on any particular platform, whether that be podcasting, YouTube, Instagram, you name it. And I think that when you think of working with influencers who yield true influence versus paying for an ad, which is the alternative, right, to be in front of the same tribe or crowd, you would almost always want someone who's trusted to be your mouthpiece and to deliver a recommendation that's truly heartfelt and actually true and authentic. So I think the power of influencers is huge, but it is a slippery slope. And I think that in an ideal world, we as brands and businesses should try to find influencers who are on their way up and try to work with them and get behind them so that as they get bigger, they'll remember you were there when they were smaller. And maybe they'll still want to keep working with you, even though they'll be charging everyone else quadruple the price because you were there and you helped them get on their way. So I think there is something to working with micro influencers, but I think it's got to be measurable. It's going to be more time to manage it, but it definitely is something that can yield a lot of fruit. I personally would rather build influencers inside the company. I personally would rather take someone in the business, whether it be the CEO like me, or whether it be someone else inside the company, and have them create content and let them become an influencer and the personality, because then you have a win-win. They work for you. They're part of the same team as you. And you're helping grow their influence, but they also are tied back to your business. And we're seeing less and less of that, but I think we should see more and more of that, because that is really cool. And if depending on what size company you work for, you might have someone who really is a great communicator. And with the right resources, you know, you could maybe put a little money behind their content, help get that word out, help them grow that audience. And know fully well that they might get so famous, they might leave you and might go off on your own. But it might be better than the alternative, which is to go work with these people who are working with your competitors. I don't know. That's just my raw thinking.
I was just going to add, I happened to watch the documentary last week that the Fyre Festival sort of debacle that happened with Ja Rule, and that was really social media gone awry, right? Influencer marketing kind of gone awry, and the idea of the image and the picture that is drafted to kick something off and promote it, so being so far from the reality of what actually transpired on that island. And it kind of made me cringe as a marketer, because it sort of left this taste in your mouth of like, that's how it can go so wrong when you have maybe not the most ethical / authentic people that you're partnering with. There's definitely a risk.
It's pretty sad. Yeah, it's pretty sad. And the reality is that a lot of the really small influencers are willing to do or say anything for the right amount of money, which is exactly not what you want, right? You want someone who actually isn't willing to do or say anything. You want someone who's actually going to take a stand and be honest and give a true opinion. And this is particularly where I think YouTube is doing it right. There's a lot of great creators that are developing channels that are just blowing up on YouTube. And if you can find someone and get started with them when it's early, remember that their back catalog of all that stuff is going to keep being watched. In the same way that with podcasts, like I have people that download episode 1 of my podcast from 6.5 years ago that just found me today. It still happens. Okay. So if you can get behind someone and they create really great content, the life of that can be gargantuous, and that can keep providing benefits to you down the road that may be hard for you to quantify today.
Awesome. All right. So the big macro question here, we've talked about authenticity, we've talked about influencers, Facebook, Instagram, privacy, regulation, how big video is, podcasting. What excites you the most about digital and social marketing 2019 and forward?
Well, it is really video, honestly. I'm most excited about the opportunities that present themselves around video, because 2018 was the year that the algorithms came locking around us marketers. And what I mean by that is artificial intelligence systems, you know, on all the social platforms and every other thing you can imagine, email, the whole thing, they are ensuring that the messages that we convey as marketers or businesses are not received by the intended recipients without having to pay money. And they're doing that to protect the integrity of their systems, because, you know, and they say when the marketers come in, everything kind of goes wrong. And it's not most of us, it's just a few, like those Fry people we were talking about. So if we're honest with ourselves and we realize that all those things that were free now cost money, then we have to ask ourselves, like, okay, if we're going to spend money, it's got to work, right? And that's why influencer marketing works so well. But there's another way that you can spend money, and it's creating great video content for your audience, documentary style content or any of that kind of content. And the reason I'm excited about that is because video, as we talked about, can be so addictive in nature. It can be binge worthy. And believe it or not, there are people that want to learn just as much as there are people that want to binge Netflix, right? There's people out there that they get excited about something and they'll spend 50 hours watching videos over a month just to learn about it. Okay. And if you put yourself in the context of, I want to be the business that creates that content, I want to be the one that people find when they're looking for that content, because I want to be the one that they can say later when they get successful, it was your videos that inspired me or educated me or helped me get to where I want to go. And then those people become walking mouthpieces for everything that you do, even if they're not a customer.
Yeah. Absolutely. Awesome.
So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's kind of what I'm excited about.
Yeah, no, it's good to know because, especially since you're doing this absolutely every day and so deep into it, and actually experimenting with all these different channels and learning and seeing where you're seeing success, it's good to hear, specifically where you're laser focused and see the most potential. So thanks for sharing that. All right, final three questions. And these are a little more personal here. What book are you reading right now?
The Bible, believe it or not, every day. That's awesome. The only book that I'm reading right now. I do have another book on my desk, which I haven't cracked open yet, which I want to read, is Measure What Matters Most, or Measure What Matters. I just haven't cracked the thing yet. It's on my list. I hope it doesn't collect dust.
That's awesome. We'll put that in the show notes. Okay. Measure What Matters and the Bible.
All right. And regarding a time when you saw maybe a mistake or something that you saw as an opportunity for yourself to improve upon, what was that story and how'd you rebound from that?
Okay, well, it was fall of 2018. I decided to publish season two of our show, The Journey, on Facebook. And I decided to email like 500,000 people on our email list and say, everybody go watch it on Facebook. And then all of a sudden I'm like, what the heck's going on here? No one's watching the past a couple seconds. Is it the show? Is it me? What is it? And then I went on YouTube and I'm like, whoa, very few people are watching on YouTube, but they're watching it for a long time. So what ended up happening was after a couple of weeks of this, I realized, wow, my presupposition was all wrong. People really don't watch video for more than a couple of seconds on Facebook. It's all YouTube. So we made this big splash and we said goodbye Facebook video, and we went all in on YouTube, and we shifted our Facebook video into very short form, 60-second video or live video for less than 10 minutes, and just moved all of our show over to YouTube. And my gosh, it was a night and day thing. Now we get like 60 to 70% average watch time on a 7-minute show. Okay, to do the math on that, that's like 5 minutes the average person is watching that show. On Facebook, the average watch time was 10 seconds, okay? Exact same content. So there were people telling me it's because your content sucks. And I'm like, well, turns out it's not true. It's because on Facebook, people don't go there to watch video. They go there to scroll. They see the video, it pops up. They watch it for a couple seconds. They flick it out of the way. You've all done it, right? But on YouTube, they go there, as you mentioned, Tuck. Sorry, I don't know if your real name is Tuck.
Only my mom's allowed to call me that. So.
Okay. Yeah. So Tuck, they go there and they watch it, and it's built for that. There's no world notifications popping up to distract you. It's just that. Yeah. And sure enough, man, that was a good move for us, but it was a big mistake.
Yeah. Now we know why Facebook charges at the 3-second mark, right? Because that's the basic duration of watched video on Facebook.
It's just going to say it's that lean back mentality. YouTube is just such a different environment. People are going there to watch such long form. Again, like tutorial videos are such a great example of that. My husband's a woodworker and he will sit there for 45 minutes and watch a guy with like a table saw make legs on a table. And it's like, he's taken apart our entire washing machine based on a YouTube video teaching him how to do it.
Think about it. Like, my wife is totally into HGTV, and like she used to watch this, literally would be on all day and she'd just be watching all these home remodel shows. But now, like, okay, great. There's a whole channel on cable just for remodeling homes. But guess what? On YouTube, there's a channel for people that make legs of stools, right? So like you can find that stuff on YouTube. And as a result, people love it. So that's why there's so much of an opportunity.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. All right. In closing, one piece of advice you give to a business leader about social.
Don't feel like you're too late to the game. Social media has been around for a long time. It's now a mature industry, and you may look at others that have really big audiences. You may say to myself, I could never, ever be like them. I just want you to remember that every single month there are people that come out of the woodwork and do things that no one has ever heard of before. And all of a sudden, everybody starts talking about them and everybody starts sharing their content. So there's no one in the world that's like you. There's no one in the world that will do it like you. And do not let the fact that you feel like you're too late to the game ever stop you from getting in, because reality is it's never too late.
Ah, oh, that's such an inspirational closing. I love it. Thank you. Thank you for this time, Mike. This has been really fun. I've learned a lot from you.
Yeah, this has been great.
Thank you.
Yeah. Where can people find you if they want to follow you and watch your awesome content?
Okay. Well, if you listen to podcasts, which I hope you do because you're listening right now, and you want another one, Social Media Marketing is my weekly podcast. If you want to check out what I'm doing with my documentary, go to journey.show and it'll ask you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Either one of those, are the places to consume content. You can find me on Instagram at my last name, at Stelzner, S-T-E-L-Z-N-E-R. Those are a few ways you can reach out.
Awesome.
Awesome.
All right,
Mike. Thanks so much for being here. We really appreciate it. I'm a huge fan. I'm actually the podcast listener. Not so much a video watcher. I do it on occasion. I just don't have as much time. So I'm always consuming in the ears. That's where I go. So I appreciate all of your...
I listen to 20 shows a week. So I get you, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing your expertise and the excellent guests that you bring on as well, because a lot of knowledge sharing comes from that. So appreciate it. All right, guys, thanks for listening. Social Currency, you can subscribe to us anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and get notified every Monday when we release a new episode, when you sign up for our newsletter. And you can find the show on Facebook at Social Currency Show, or find us individually on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Appreciate you guys listening and hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. Check out the links and we'll share more in the show notes. Have a good one. Thanks, Jess.
Bye, Chuck. Thanks, Mike.
My pleasure.